RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And it's Tuesday, June 19th. And if it's Tuesday, it must be another edition of the Landry Football Podcast. And it is. We appreciate you joining us. A lot to get to today. Boy, as I was looking at the calendar and thinking that we're mid-June, about a month from now, we'll be talking about NFL training camps, getting ready to open up, rookies reporting, and off we go. At that point, it's no turning back and getting ready for the football season. A reminder that, you know, we've done a lot of, if you've checked out LandryFootball.com recently, we've done a lot of college football previews. Kind of we do things in cycles. It's just a byproduct of the time of the year. You guys know we focused a lot on the draft. Once the draft was over, we wanted to spend a lot of time looking at spring practice tape. So we're getting all the college previews up, and we're doing that. We've got only about, I think, about eight of the major college football programs, and we'll get to many of the other group of five programs, preview all of them. So we're going to get that to you. But we haven't forgot about the NFL, and we've been working on the NFL, and we're getting ready to break out some interesting features on NFL players, NFL teams, so be sure to look at that. And a reminder, if you're not a member of LandryFootball.com, what a great opportunity to get involved with it right now. We've got our summer savings special, so you get all the summer roster analysis and team previews and daily notebooks on the college and NFL scene. You get it for 50% off if you join now. Limited time only. We're going to close that out before you know it, so take advantage of it now. You not only get everything leading up to the season that gets you better prepared for the season, but you get it at a 50% discount. So you basically get the football season for free if you sign up for the year membership right now. So take advantage of it. All you have to do is use the coupon code SUMMER, S-U-M-M-E-R. Do it today. Get the football season locked up and ready to go. Some things we want to get into today. We always say this. We like to keep the podcast into that 40-minute or so range, or a little bit less if we can, just to make sure that we don't go over and waste too much of your time. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen. But some things I want to get to today. I want to talk about some of the top non-conference college football games that going into the season. Now, this will change as the season starts to unfold. But going into it, some games that I think are the most intriguing to look at. We talk a lot about major college football teams, but we're going to talk a little bit about the top group of five players in college football. We've got, gosh, about a half a dozen questions to answer. And by the way, if you have a question that you want addressed here, send it to us. Contact us on the website. Hit contact Chris. Send me an email. I'll address it here on the podcast. So we're going to answer those. We're going to continue with our X's and O's series, talking about cover two and explaining that coverage, what it means. You hear it a lot. I'm going to give you the understanding of what it truly is. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the top defensive lines in college football heading into the season and top defensive linemen. So a lot to get to today. Want to start with a look at some of the top conference games that intrigue me to this point to start the season. And when I think about the early part of the season in particular, I think about Michigan-Notre Dame, September 1st. It's not played since 2014. It was one of the great rivalries that took place in the early part of the season for years and years, and it kind of shaped the fortunes of both teams, as both teams were usually top 10 teams. Both of these teams, while I would not consider either one a strong national playoff contender, this is a game that has tremendous significance for both, because I think the loser is potentially in for a tough season. The winner has certainly gotten off the season to a good start. So going to be real interesting to see. Brian Kelly, Jim Harbaugh wanted this game. I think both need it for their, at least particularly Jim Harbaugh's sake, for the sign that the program is headed in the right direction. Listen, at least Brian Kelly has taken a Notre Dame team to the national championship game. He's had one really disastrous year, but for the most part, he's been good. Is it good enough to for most Notre Dame fans? It's not. I think Notre Dame fans don't realize that it's a lot tougher job than I think most people think. And Brian's had some success. Jim Harbaugh, let's call it like it is. He's not had success at Michigan as a head coach. Big game for both teams. How about Auburn-Washington? Same day as Michigan-Notre Dame. That's in Atlanta. Jake Browning, Jarrett Stidham, two good quarterbacks. Really good SEC Pac-12 matchup, and it's a really going to be a fun one, I think. How about USC-Texas? You know, I thought a decent game last year. Obviously, the status of these programs, Clay Helton, Tom Herman, it's kind of at that point where games like this matter a little bit. LSU-Miami. This is a Miami program that showed marked improvement last year. This LSU team is, this program is struggling right now, trying to find its sea legs. This is a big game, particularly for Ed Orgeron. How about Clemson A&M? I don't know how big this is, but certainly how competitive A&M could be is certainly going to at least get the Aggies a little excited or maybe a little bit weary that maybe the program is not as close as they think. TCU, Ohio State, September 15th in Arlington. How about that? Really good game. Very well-coached TCU program. It's going to be a good TCU team. A better Ohio State team should be a lot of fun. I give you a couple of more that I think are intriguing. I want to see what Oklahoma does against UCLA on September 8th and Norman. Oklahoma's the better team. Program's in better shape. But see what Chip Kelly can do and what he might have in store there. A little bit of a game that has some interest is, how about Florida Atlantic and Oklahoma? I'm going to see Lane Kiffin. You know, Lane Kiffin and that ego is going to want to make some news. Notre Dame, Virginia Tech's another intriguing game. How about Boise, Oklahoma State? It's going to be a real interesting one. You look at the conference games, if I'm looking at the top conference games, we'll get into that maybe a little bit later, but I'm thinking Auburn, Alabama is going to be huge as it is always. How about Ohio State, Penn State, September 29th? How about Auburn, Georgia, November 10th? How about West Virginia, Oklahoma, late November 23rd? Going to be big. Michigan, Ohio State on the 24th, always big. How about Wisconsin, Penn State? How about OU, Texas, October 6th? Clemson, Florida State, how good can Florida State be? Still think Clemson's a better team. How about Ohio State, Michigan State's always interesting. And the other one is Stanford, Washington on November 3rd. Kind of jump out at me amongst the games within conference and most importantly, the non-conference games that we'll get into another day. We talk a lot about the top players in college football, and we've kind of taken each position, and we're going to get into the defensive linemen and talk about some of the top defensive end and defensive tackles, and we talk about the best everywhere, and we talk about them in terms of college players, and then, of course, around draft time, we talk about pro prospects, and we do that during the season, too. It's not necessarily one and the same, although there's a lot of correlation. But not enough attention is paid to the group of five players. Why most people, unless you're a fan of those schools, you don't watch those games enough. Unless there's a team that's maybe unbeaten and people are wondering how good is this team, they just don't make the radar of TV watching for a lot of fans. And therefore, a lot of players you don't know as much about. Now, some you do, some you don't. So we're going to get into some guys that I think that you need to mark down this year is players that you need to pay attention to, and you need to find a chance to maybe either tape it to where you can watch these players if you really are a college football fan. Now, everyone knows about Ed Oliver, big defensive tackle in Houston, was a five-star recruit, went to Houston, outstanding, going to be a high pick in next year's NFL draft. We'll see how everything plays out with health and his performance, but really an outstanding player that you probably know a lot about. Mackenzie Milton, Central Florida quarterback. 2 years ago, he threw for over 4,000 yards, 37 touchdowns, can run the football well. Really good team, really good player. He was a very highly recruited player and very, very good. Sutton Smith, probably haven't heard of him. Defensive end out of Northern Illinois. I thought he was one of the more improved players in college football. He was the MAC Defensive Player of the Year. He redshirted in 2016. Really, really good player. Devin Singletary, a running back at Florida Atlantic. Really good in that Lane Kiffin offense. Big-time talent. Andrew Wingard, a safety at Wyoming. Really good player. Good range. Max Scorping, an offensive lineman from Northern Illinois. This Northern Illinois team's going to be really good. He's been a really outstanding offensive lineman in the MAC for 3 years. Someone that you really need to pay attention to if you like the watching line play. This guy's really good. He's got a good next-level future. Penny Hart, a wide receiver from Georgia State. Really good player. Quick, very productive. He had 74 catches, 1,100-plus yards, 8 touchdowns as a sophomore last year. Just going to be a junior. Anthony Johnson, another wide receiver. This one from Buffalo. Former junior college transfer. Really good player. Very, very productive. Big-time talent. Mason Fine, a quarterback at North Texas. Really good signee by Seth Luttrell 2 years ago. No offers on the FBS level. Boy, is he good enough to play at a lot of big-time programs. People missed on him. Late developer. Brent Stockstill, people know a little bit about him. Dad's a coach, Middle Tennessee. Had the injury last year, but he's a really productive player for them. Jalen Ferguson, defensive lineman from Louisiana Tech, really good player. Khalil Hodge, a linebacker from Buffalo. He's not Khalil Mack, but Khalil Hodge is really good coming out of junior college ranks. Mark Rippon's nephew, Brett Rippon, quarterback at Boise State's outstanding, and another reason why Boise's going to have a really good year this year. Big-time talent, big-time arm talent, good player. Jalen Moore, running back from Appalachian State. He's led the Sun Belt in rushing last couple of years. Really can scoot. Ulysses Gilbert, linebacker, Akron. Really good player, good tackler, instinctive player. Cody Thompson, Deontay Johnson, probably as good a pair, a duo receivers at the group of five levels you're going to find. At Toledo, really, really good players. Watch this Toledo team this year. Going to be very good. Ohio as well. Northern Illinois. Three really good teams in the MAC this year that can really play against top quality competition. John Kinoy, an offensive lineman from Western Michigan. He started at freshman at center for them in 2015. He's played really, really well for them. Good line leader. Outstanding player. Carl Granderson, coming off a knee injury. Defensive lineman from Wyoming. Really good pass rusher, can really push the pocket. Malik Reed, linebacker in Nevada, is making the move from defensive end. He's going to stand up, see whether he can drop, but he's still primarily a good edge rusher. And then finally, Malcolm Perry, quarterback in Navy. He started last season as slot back, but he took over the starting quarterback job late in the year. And boy, is he really good running that offense. So some names to remember. In the group of five area of players that I think are going to be outstanding, you should give them a look-see. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about some defensive linemen, the defensive line units, and some defensive linemen that I think are really players that outstanding talent that you need to focus in on. And this is a byproduct of going back over film grade notes from last year and looking at spring practice tape. And when I look at the defensive line units, pretty easy, which group is the best in the country going into the season. It's Clemson. They've been really good for some time along the defensive line. They've never been this good. This is the best of them all. You got Christian Wilkins at tackle, Austin Bryant, Klein Farrell. Both were high NFL picks that passed that are coming back. And then they've got Dexter Lawrence, a junior tackle. If you took looking at the top tackles in the country, Wilkins and Lawrence are two of them. If you're looking at two of the top ends, Austin Bryant and Farrell, one of them. I mean, there is no weakness here. There's only strength against strength against strength against strength. Really talented. They've got depth in outstanding five-star freshmen in Xavier Thomas and K.J. Hendry. Richard Yergin returns after missing the 2017 due to injury. Really, really outstanding group, and it's the best looking defensive line as a group I've seen in quite some time. I'd have to go back and really look at it and say it's been a good decade that you've seen a defensive line individually as talented as this group. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to play great, could underachieve, you could have healthy. I don't know any of that. Talent-wise, this is as good as I've seen in a long time. Ohio State's not bad at all. They've got to replace Sam Hubbard and Jalen Holmes and Tyquan Lewis and tackle Tracy Sprinkle. But Larry Johnson, great recruiter and really good defensive line coach. Nick Bosa's a beast, a high pick. Chase Young is another good defensive end. Jonathan Cooper and Jason Cornell really bring some good depth. Draymond Jones is the top interior player for them. Robert Landers and Haskell Garrett and Devon Hamilton are also good players on the inside. Really, really good group. Big Ten also has another good group, and that's Michigan. This is where Michigan can start to make a U. It could be even more dominant this year. Maurice Hurst departs, but they've got Aubrey Solomon. You've got Rashawn Gary and Chase Winkovich. Really, some of the best ends. Outstanding group. And then I think you go to the SEC and you look at Auburn and Alabama. Auburn, I think, is going to be deeper in the trenches. They've got, you know, they lost Jeff Holland, but they've got Marlon Davidson and Derek Brown, elite players. You've got T.D. Moultrie, Bryant, Big Cat Bryant. You've got Dontarius Russell, also as a defensive tackle. Really good group. Alabama's always good. Deron Payne is going to be missed, no doubt about it. But Raekwon Davis, Isaiah Buggs, Quinnen Williams, LeBrian Ray. Buggs is a really emerging player. Kulikowski, the new defensive line coach, is going to have a tremendous impact. Johnny Dwight will have a role to kind of fill in with Payne, but really good group. Really good group. So Clemson, Ohio State, Michigan, Auburn, Alabama. If you're looking at some other top units, I would put Mississippi State and Florida in that group. I think Miami and Virginia Tech is pretty good, as is Georgia's. I think Florida State, Texas, Washington are also pretty good. So we'll get into the the linebacker units on Thursday. How about top defensive linemen individually in the country? I'm going to break them down into ends versus tackles. And we're going to go through the ends first. The best end would be Nick Bosa of Ohio State, then Rashawn Gary of Michigan, both juniors, Raekwon Davis of Alabama, and then Cleveland Farrell of Clemson, we just talked about. Those are all juniors. Will likely all come out with healthy years. All going to be high picks. I mentioned Sutton Smith a little bit earlier when the group of five players in Northern Illinois, he belongs there, as does Marlon Davidson of Auburn. Austin Bryant, Clemson's other end. C.C. Jefferson of Florida. Montez Sweat out of Mississippi State. How about Ben Bonogo of TCU? Transfer from Louisiana Monroe. Chase Winkovich, senior from Michigan. Landis Durham of Texas A&M. Curtis Weaver, a sophomore from Boise, he's really good. And Joe Jackson of Miami. Some elite defensive ends. If I'm looking at the top defensive tackles, it's a close call between Christian Wilkins of Clemson and Ed Oliver of Houston. A little bit different. Wilkins is a little bit more versatile. Ed's a little bit quicker as a three technique. Dexter Lawrence is an interior blocker that's more of a power guy. All three are elite, and you could throw a blanket over them. And while they're all a little different, Lawrence is more of a power guy. Oliver is more the three technique. Wilkins has got the best blend of both. Jeffrey Simmons of Mississippi State. Dremont Jones of Ohio State. We just talked about him. Jerry Tillery of Notre Dame. Derek Brown of Auburn. We talked a little bit about him. Greg Gaines of Washington. Ricky Walker of Virginia Tech. And Olive Segapulu of Wisconsin are all good. He's a really good nose guard. So those are some of the top defensive linemen in the country going into the season as I see them, based upon film grade. We'll see how they play this year. And we'll, of course, continue and keep you updated on where things headed or who are the best players playing during the course of the year. Hey, I want to get into some Cover 2 talk in a second, but I want to tell you about a good new friend of the program. Guys, I want to talk to you about your love life. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y, to try it. It's free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, you hear the term about Cover 2. People throw that out. Some people think it's a defense. Some people, what is it? Cover 2 is a coverage. I'm going to describe to you, and this may be a little technical, and we've gotten some really good feedback, but I want to try to explain it. If you want, just go ahead and maybe re-listen to it. I'm going to try to explain it to where it gives you a better idea. Most people have heard the term Cover 2, and while many throw it out, you know, the term and identifying a coverage are many integral components that make the coverage work. I'll try to give you a better understanding of the coverage from both sides. Cover 2 is a 2-deep, 5-under zone coverage scheme run out of both base and sub-package personnel. So you know from past podcasts, right? Sub-package is dime and nickel, right? By rushing 4 and dropping 7 into coverage with the eyes on the quarterback, the defense can take away vertical concepts, vertical routes, while forcing the ball underneath to the flat or check down option. In the NFL, the Tampa 2 scheme is the most common 2-deep shell we see on Sundays, with the Mike backer running the inside vertical seam to give the defense a 3-deep look. So in essence, the Tampa 2 coverage is a Cover 2 pre-snap that morphs into a Cover 3 post-snap. I will, you know, introduce to you the basics of the Cover 2 with the focus on the landmarks, the zone drops, the techniques that are vital to producing those results and limiting the explosive plays. In the Tampa 2, in Cover 2, both safeties, the free and strong, are responsible for deep halves of the field and fill the alley. That's between the cornerback and the edge of the formations versus the run game. They align at a depth of 15 yards and work to 18 yards at the snap with the top of the numbers as their zone landmark. The safeties read the release of the number one receiver for their run pass key and play top down while overlapping any throw to the deep middle of the field. The corners align and press and jam the number one receivers at the snap to force an inside release. This is crucial to prevent an outside release that will widen the safeties off the hash marks and essentially open the middle of the field. After the jam, both cornerbacks sink hard at a 45-degree angle to protect the cushion. What you're trying to do when you sink hard and give that 45-degree angle, you try to protect or cushion the safeties against a 9 route or a 7 route, a corner route. 9 is the go route, while reacting to any throw in the flat. To create that three deep look, the Mike backer runs the inside vertical seam. He'll open his hips to the passing strength, which is two side end in this example, to carry or match the seam route down the middle of the field. The Mike has to show the athleticism and hip flexibility in Tampa 2 to redirect the quarterback if the quarterback comes back to the open or weak side of the formation with his throw. The two outside backers, the Sam and the Will backers, are the seam hook defenders. They sink to a depth of 10 to 12 yards between the numbers and the hash marks to cushion the inside vertical seam and react to any throw underneath. Both linebackers read the quarterback once they get their zone landmarks and cheat to the throw, drive to the opposite hash to step into throwing lanes. In any zone coverage, the front four rush is vital. If you give a quarterback time in the pocket, it can light up too deep coverage. However, when you have a front four rush that gets home, plus seven defenders dropping into coverage with their eyes on the quarterback, cover two is a scheme that will limit the offensive abilities to produce explosive plays. May be able to dump some things off, but that's where the speed and rallying point underneath comes in. Now, playing the Tampa 2 versus a slot formation. So we're going to focus on the cornerback and the strong safety aligned to the tight end side. In cover one, which is man-free, we discussed that last Thursday, the cornerbacks travel versus a slot formation and match their coverage. However, in cover two, the cornerbacks stay to the closed or strong side of the formation, and because of that, the cornerbacks become the primary edge support player versus the run game. That means they have to take on the fullback or pulling guard and set or restrict the edge of the defense. If they read pass, the cornerback sinks and protects the safety versus a possible seven route, a corner route, from the tight end while reacting to any throw in the flat. The strong safety, instead of dropping to the top of the numbers landmark, will drop inside of the tight end with the free safety to the open side of the formation. He will drop inside of the tight end. The safety always aligns and drops inside of the number one receiver. Versus the run game, the strong safety fills to the close side, the C-gap. Now you know what that C-gap is. If a defense is going to play cover two in early down and distance situation, it's important to find cornerbacks who are willing to tackle, fill, and defend the edge when the offense aligns in a slot formation. That's not easy work when an offensive guard pulls to kick out the corner. You must get low, play with leverage, and restrict the running lanes. Once the ball moves into the deep red zone, plus 15-yard line, the Tampa 2 turns in what we call red 2, with the safeties and corners adjusting their technique to account for the short field and reduce throwing lanes. In red 2, which again is what? Tampa 2 defense in the red zone. The defense is creating a 5-across look to protect the goal line using the 2-deep half safeties. The Mike backer and the two corners with the nickel Will backer playing the seam hook drops. Both corners play with a soft squat technique. Instead of jamming the receiver on the release, the cornerbacks open and sink with a zone technique, which means their back is to the sideline to carry the outside fade route, plays like quarters technique while reacting to the flat. The safeties play with a flat foot read. With limited room to work on a reduced field, there's no need for safeties to backpedal. They will flat foot read, shuffle through their run pass keys, and drive top down on any three-step route, a slant, a flat, and use the inline, the back of the end zone, as their help versus the dig in the post. The Mike backer will again open to the passing strength, which is a three wide receiver side in most cases, and they match that quickly to the inside vertical seam. This is where we see NFL offenses more than colleges occupy the safety and create one-on-one matchups inside versus the tight end up against the Mike backer. The two-seam hook defenders, the nickel, the Will backer, shorten their drops and read the quarterback. They must widen versus the number two on the flat and cushion any intermediate throw that can threaten the safeties. Now, in third in 11-plus situations, okay, this is what we call, it's the opposite of red zone. We call that, instead of red two, green two. In third and 11-plus, the defense can play green two to put basically a tent on top of the defense to protect and stick and force the quarterback to take the check down. Instead of aligning at 15 yards, the safeties will get to 18 before the snap and increase their depth to be in a position to drive top down on any vertical concept. The mic backer adjusts his alignments and will get to a pre-snap depth of 10 to 12 yards to play the inside vertical seam. This creates a true three deep coverage and eliminates the throw down the middle of the field. Both cornerbacks will again jam and sink versus the number one receiver. However, they will play this almost as a trail man technique down the field and react late to the flat route to cushion the 9 or 7 route. When playing green two, the defense will give up the flat check down voluntarily to protect the sticks and get off the field on third down. Defending the top cover two beaters. There are four verticals. The flat seven, the corner route, and the deep dig are the top cover two beaters we see every week. The opposing offenses look to attack the top of the secondary and get some bait underneath the open throwing windows. Four verticals consist of 2 9 routes, go routes, and 2 inside seam routes. The offense wants to put stress on 2 deeps, half safeties, and work the mic backer to the middle of the field and expose the holes in cover two. Both safeties are at the proper depth, square to the quarterback, and on top of their landmarks, top of the numbers. This puts them in a position to drive downhill on the 9 route or the seam. Even though the cornerbacks allow an outside release, the cornerbacks sink with a 9 route, protecting the safeties, and with the nickel wheel backer cushioning the inside seam route, the mic backer can gain depth to read the quarterback. Now that the throwing lanes are reduced, the mic backer can match to the slot receiver on the inside seam and drive on the throw to intercept the ball. Flat 7 or corner route is one of the more common cover 2 beaters because it allows the offense to set the bait for the corner while opening up the deep hole to target the 7 route. From a plus split alignment, 2 to 3 yards on top of the numbers, the X receiver takes a hard inside seam, creating room for the 7 route before pushing up the field vertically to stem the corner. Underneath, you send the tight end to flash his bait. Oftentimes, the corner will be food instead of sinking hard at a 45-degree angle to protect the safety on the 7 cut. He'll squat, take the bait of the underneath flat route. You must remember that you got to play deep to short at corner and only react to the flat once the 7 route is eliminated. Another common problem is when the safety plays too deep, like 30 yards off the ball. You want to have increased depth due to the threat of the vertical receiver. However, too much depth, in this case 30 yards off the ball, increases the already large throwing window for the quarterback to target for a really big gain. So a route that should have resulted in a quarterback dumping the ball to the tight end turns into a flat, which is a completed pass downfield because of poor discipline and technique from the defense. Now, finally, the deep dig or square in. NFL offenses in particular will run a deep dig out of the dagger and sucker concepts, which is a clear out seam, the dig combo, to remove the mic backer, set some bait for the nickel, and target the deep inside breaking cut for the positive gain. By removing the mic backer on the seam and forcing the nickel to take the bait versus the underneath curl, the quarterback can target the deep dig route in front of the strong safety. However, defenses can eliminate the dig route if the nickel plays with discipline and gains depth while reading the quarterback. With the safety in a position to drive top down to the throw and the cornerback sinking to protect versus a possible 7 cut, the nickel ignores the bait underneath. He ignores the flat route and drops directly into the throwing lane. This results in a chance for an interception and forces the ball into coverage instead of taking the flat route. So let me give you the cover two checklist. It's a guide that every safety should follow in the deep half when identifying the run pass keys and wide receiver stems. 1, with the receiver in a plus two split, an outside release equals 1 of 2 routes, a fade or a comeback. That's it. Because of the restrictions that the sideline puts on the receiver, there isn't enough room to run outside breaking concepts such as the deep out or 7 route. An inside release to a vertical stem, top of the numbers, tells the safety to play for the dig, a 7 and a possible pulse. A flat inside release is the three-step game or the slant or the shallow drive route. If the wide receiver blocks, The safety gets his eyes back inside to fill the alley as a secondary run support player. This gives you some key things, a checklist, and it's just a quick guide. The next time you watch a game, keep in mind that the number one receiver reads like an open book. If the safety plays with eye discipline, when identifying the initial stem and run pass keys, he's in good shape. So I hope that gives you an idea. I know it's a lot of stuff. It may be a little technical. Can clear it up for you if there's something that you're a little bit fuzzy on or can do it. Go back and listen to it. Break it down. And then, obviously, when you watch a game, you can notice some of these things. It's not important that you remember everything, but if you understand some of the basic things, you can really get a feel for what this stuff is all about. All right, going to end the show today with some questions. Kevin asks, how much of Kansas City Chiefs' collapse last year do you attribute to the injury of Eric Berry? Not much. It hurt him. He's a big-time player. That wasn't the reason. They're a good team, but they lost their top playmaker in the playoffs in Travis Kelce versus the Titans, or they probably win that game, and who knows what's happened. The defense has some good pass rushers, but they're not as deep. They've certainly made some moves at corner that's going to have to work out for them. It's a good team, not a great team. I don't know that it's a collapse. I think they've gotten a lot out of these teams. I don't think the Chiefs coaches have gotten a lot out of this team, but I think there are limitations, and I think that's why they're moving on from Alex Smith, and I don't know that it's going to be a right move or a success move or not, but they need more playmakers on offense in the passing game, and when you lose Travis Kelce, who's the best playmaker, it hurt them a great deal, that more than anything. He asked me if I see about the Buccaneers and the fact that I didn't see the Bucs as a playoff team last year, and do I see it the same way this year? It's still the fourth best roster in the NFC South. Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina are better rosters. Now, if you have some bad things happen to a couple of those teams, all of a sudden your record can be better because you're going to play, you know, it's potentially four games. That makes the difference between, you know, being a 7-win team and a 10-win team, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs. Are the Bucs a playoff team? No. But neither were the Bills last year, but they got in. So let's just see how it plays out. They're the fourth best roster in the league as we go into the season. We'll see how things play out going forward. And can the Rams rely on Tlaib and Peters to play man coverage? Well, that's certainly what they're going to do. This is what Wade Phillips needs for his defense. He needs two corners to allow him to be aggressive with his front. These are two talented guys that can cover. They're both risk takers. We'll see how it plays out. Risk takers, you know what that means. Big plays both ways. Again, another question asking me to analyze the current staff at Rutgers. It's a adequate staff. They've got Big Ten money, but they are not, resources-wise, they don't measure up with the top programs. What is the team ceiling? I think going to the team ceiling is going to a bowl game every year. And they're going to need some help with that scheduling out of conference. They play in a tough division. It's going to kill them. There's no doubt about it. This is not a great team. And it leads to another question that he has. Considering the weak tradition, how come the program hasn't done more considering the close proximity to football talent? Well, they have not put forth the administrative support to compete at a high level. You know, Penn State would come in and take kids on a regular basis in the paternal era, and there never was anybody that did anything at Rutgers until Greg Schiano got there. And the answer is you've got to make a commitment to a program facility-wise, and you've got to go out and pay a lot of money for coaches. You've got to develop players well, and you have to go out and recruit guys. And to me, success leads to better recruiting. Trying to sell kids on coming to Rutgers when you've never won is tough. When you start to take kids and you develop them really well and you show, hey, guys can go to the NFL from Rutgers. You know, you do a good job developing players. All of a sudden, now you can get better players. That's how things work. You get a little better and all of a sudden your profile becomes a little better. So that's kind of the way things work, and I think that Greg did that. Greg was a really good recruiter, did a good job. And he asked me, how does Greg Dunn get more credit for the job that he did? Well, he gets a lot of credit among football people. I can't tell you what media or fans think because those folks really don't know football. people who know football recognize the great job that he did. He had NFL experience. He asked me, due to his NFL experience, how did Tennessee fans believe Greg wasn't good enough for the program? Well, first of all, he didn't have a good experience in the NFL. To be quite honest, he was not successful with Tampa, and he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. He came across in a way that was very arrogant. He's got a good relationship with Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick respects him. I respect him. But I think he also kind of acted as if he had won 5 Super Bowls the first day he stepped on the field as coach of the Bucks, and he didn't adjust very well. So he didn't have a lot of success. He's an outstanding coach. I think it's foolish for anybody to not consider this guy as a prominent college head coach. Outstanding job at Ohio State. Great defensive mind. Does a really good job with a program. Good recruiter. I think he's a home run hire for anyone. And why wasn't he accepted at Tennessee? Again, you have a lot of people that see things the way they want to see it. The Tennessee fans wanted somebody that talked like them, looked like them, acted like them, and they wanted a little bit of a Southern flavor. Didn't like the Jersey talking Schiano, and therefore, you know, made whatever move that they did. And it's unfortunate that they did so. Because I think Tennessee cost himself a chance at a really good coach. Now, would it have been a good fit? Don't know. Might have been a disastrous fit climate-wise, and that's true. I'm a believer a good football coach knows how to build a program. People start to adjust. People told me that Nick Saban would never fit at LSU because he's a Midwest guy. I told them to be quiet, listen and learn, watch and learn, that a good coach can turn a program around. And the rest is history at LSU and at Alabama. Hope that answers your question there. Can you talk a little bit about the coaches at the 2010 Auburn team and what they did? And asking about Gene Chizik and asking if Gene got lucky. I wouldn't say he got lucky. They got Cam Newton. They rode him. They had a lot of success with he and Gus Malzahn, no doubt about it. They also had some really good defensive players. And so the combination of a good defense and a quarterback that just uplifted that team, there's no doubt that it was a great run and a great team and a really good job of putting guys in a position to be successful. Why was he let go? Well, welcome to big-time college football. He didn't sustain the program. He didn't recruit very well, and so he couldn't sustain it. If you want to call that luck, go ahead. He got Cam Newton. He just was not able to replicate guys on a coaching staff or recruits that could sustain a program like a program that Auburn could. The biggest problem Auburn has had over their history is sustained success. They've not had it. The closest thing in modern time was Pat Dye. They were good, but in this day and age where they want you to beat Alabama, well, good luck beating Alabama. No one is as good as Alabama as a program. Auburn has been a roller coaster team. They either are like a disappointment or they're competing for a national title. You know, they're just mediocre or they're beating Alabama on a kick six game. I mean, it's up and down. You can look at last year and last year's team with a different coach. They're dominating LSU for a first half. They completely blow the game in the second half. It's just consistency has been a problem. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't know that Gus Malzahn's any more consistent. We'll see. They're certainly married to him financially. Also get asked, where does Jimbo Fisher rank in head coaching ability to Saban, Sweeney, and Meyer? Below them, but very good. I would probably put him definitely behind Saban, definitely behind Meyer. You could make a case for him on a par with Sweeney. Right now, Sweeney's been a little bit more successful recently. Jimbo's below those guys, but really good. One of the few guys that won a national championship. You just mentioned him. Also, Jacob asks, there are a few starting quarterbacks who look to be, to me, in the make or break years. Like to know what you think. Ryan Tannehill, are the Dolphins putting off the inevitable? Listen, Ryan Tannehill had a good year 2 years ago when he was healthy, starting to come along under Adam Gase. Then the injuries happened. So, you know, again, while you're looking at it and saying it's not good enough, well, maybe he's not. But we don't know that. He hadn't played in over a year. And the last time we've seen him play, pretty good. Is that going to continue? Don't know. But it's not like, oh, boy, they're waiting and waiting and waiting. Well, they're waiting because of the injury. And that's part of being available. So I think it is a crucial year for Tannehill to not only play well, but stay healthy and play well. Jameis Winston talks about him, makes some great plays. Let some things leave you shaking your head. Yes, he does. You also astutely talk about he doesn't know when to give up on a play and take a sack. He doesn't play smart football. He does force the football. Listen, the head coach and the GM are tied to him, so he's not going anywhere. And I think people are going to want to try to see if they can't fix him because he's got immense talent. Who's the real Marcus Mariota? Well, when healthy, he's tough. He moves the team. He protects the ball in the passing game. But health and availability is another case here. Speaking of case, was Case Keenum's 2017 real or just the product of playing with a really talented team around him? And or maybe just John Elway can't judge quarterbacks. Well, Elway is not good at evaluating quarterbacks. He struggled evaluating college guys. I mean, if you want to give him credit for finding Peyton Manning, I mean, please give him credit for recruiting Peyton Manning, not evaluating Peyton Manning. That was pretty easy. The only decision there was whether he's healthy or not, and that's a medical decision. He's not been able to evaluate a quarterback. He's trying to build a defense, and he's gone the safe route with Case Keenum to give his team adequate quarterback play and try to play around him. I think Case will be as good as the team is around him. He did play on a very talented team. He's not going to be playing on as talented a team, but it's still a pretty good team. We'll see how competitive the Broncos can be. I think they can be an improved team this year. How good is Derek Carr? It's really good. I think we've seen that when he's been healthy. He's not been healthy the past couple of years. I think John Gruden can have a positive effect on him. I think John Gruden overall is overrated at developing young players, so I don't know how good of a team that they're going to put around him. I've got probably more roster questions on the Raiders than anybody, but Derek Carr, healthy, is definitely a keeper. Last but not least, do you think Washington, Minnesota, or Kansas City made the right call by playing musical quarterbacks? Probably not. The grass is always greener, right? Washington didn't want Kirk Cousins. Okay. Minnesota's in love with him. Minnesota didn't want Case Keenum. Denver's in love with him. Kansas City didn't want Alex Smith. Washington's in love with him. I think to some degree, while all are different, they're all about the same in terms of where they're graded in the league. So maybe a change of scenery will make a difference for these guys, positively or negatively, but I don't know that all of them are going to come out smelling like a rose. We'll see. Hey, that's appreciate your questions. Remember, if you've got a question, send it to us. We'll address it here at LandryFootball.com. Remind you again about our summer savings special. Get 50% off any subscription package by using the coupon code SUMMER. Do it today. Have the football season locked up for our lowest rate ever. Limited time only, so take advantage of it now. We'll talk to you Thursday on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.